Good afternoon. My name is Maricela Robles. I probably don't need to project my voice that much, so maybe you need to turn off the mic. I'm pretty loud naturally. So my name is Maricela Robles, and I am the community liaison for the Community Engagement Program for the Southern California Clinical and Translational Science Institute. That's a mouthful, at the University of Southern California. And my job entails really building relationships and partnerships between the researchers at our university and community organizations and community clinics. So I have a really great job of being able to partner folks to do this great type of work of community engaged research. And a lot of the times I also get the opportunity to do some project management and do some of the data collection as well, which is the case in this project. And I am presenting on behalf of Dr. Dordes Baezconde Garbanati, who couldn't be here today. She's here at APHA. She's receiving an award at this time for another one of her great projects, so I'm going to do my best to represent her. The title and focus of our presentation today is using mobile technology and social media to engage promotoras de salud en Latino health. And I have no relationships to disclose. The data that we're presenting today about the use of technology among promotoras is one piece of a larger study. This study was a collaboration between Visione Compromiso, who's a statewide nonprofit organization that's dedicated to reducing health outcomes among minority and underserved communities. And they do this through the support, enhancement, and advocacy of promotoras and community health workers. The other collaborator is Dr. Lourdes Baezconde Garbanati from the Keck School of Medicine at USC. And lastly, or the last collaborator is the organization that I represent, the Community Engagement Program. The purpose of this larger study was to reduce health disparities by implementing an evidence-based educational program that was developed by the National Heart and Lung Blood Institute, which Hector mentioned earlier as Su Corazón Su Vida. And it was to be delivered by promotoras in underserved and minority communities. Promotoras are community members who act as natural liaisons and helpers to their neighbors and local neighborhoods. They may or may not be affiliated with community institutions. The focus of the larger study was to train 25 promotoras on the NHLBI curriculum, which was 11 sessions long. We trained 13 promotoras in Los Angeles and 13 in Kern County, which is a semi-rural area located approximately 2.5 hours from Los Angeles. In addition, we trained 33 promotoras on the same curriculum via webinar, which I will discuss more in detail in a few slides. The focus, however, of the project was to work closely with the 25 promotoras that received the in-person training and who also then were expected to teach two series of these 11-session curriculum out in the community, and we provided support and follow-up through these activities. Besides, however, their role as educators in the community, they took on another role for this project. They formed part of the research team, and as such, they participated in evaluation activities and things such as recruitment, obtaining informed consent, and collecting de-identified pre- and post-data from community members. So once they received the training, the promotoras provided these workshops in group settings in the communities and a number of different venues out in the community, places such as schools, churches, community centers, and parks. The 25 promotoras reached 730 community members through the facilitation of 49 community workshops in the community. They maintain a very impressive 73% retention rate because this is an 11-week course and approximately every session is around 2 hours. So this is a great accomplishment, and there is no incentives, no financial incentives for the community participants. And as a very short summary of the outcomes, because it's not the focus of today's presentation, but I think it certainly gives them some context for what I'm about to present. The data did indicate that community participants made significant changes in things such as the amount of physical activity the participants performed, and also we saw increases in knowledge in things such as heart disease, smoking, knowledge increase in signs of heart attacks, and the benefits of physical activity. Now, as I mentioned before, as a piece of this larger study, we surveyed 25 promotoras, the ones that received the in-person training, and also surveyed the ones that participated via webinar. Those that participated via webinar were asked to complete an online survey 30 days post to follow up, and we included questions about their use of technology, how frequently they use the technology, and then their preferred method of communication. So out of those 45 that were surveyed, all of them said they have an email account. 78% said they own a cell phone. And only 36% said they have a home landline, which I think is probably not surprising as a lot of us are replacing our home landlines for cell phones. And then 73% use text messaging. 67% have a Facebook account. And when we asked them what was their preferred method of communication, and this was specifically asking them what was their preferred method of communication when communicating about projects and their work as promotoras. 58% said via cell phone, 33% via email, and then the remainder 3% said their home landline. Now, we knew that simply saying they had an email account didn't necessarily mean they were accessing it on a regular basis. And for the 25 promotoras that we were providing support and follow-up, this was particularly important because we needed to know what was the best way to provide support and communication in a timely manner. So we wanted to know a little bit more. And we asked them, out of the 45 that said they had an email account, 67% said they check it at least once a day. 24% said they check their email at least once a week, and 9% less than that. Out of the 30 that said they had a Facebook account, 60% check it at least once a day, and 40% check it at least once a week. Now, technology also proved to be a really useful tool for the research team in addressing project challenges. As I mentioned before, the promotoras became part of the research team, and although they went through the City Human Subjects training and also received training on what is research, what is the importance and evaluation for the work that they're doing, and also obviously receiving training on the specific research protocol for this study, we found that we had some issues at the beginning around data quality, participant confidentiality, and also integrity when it came to the data, such as maybe missing data at the beginning. And this was especially challenging when we were working with two groups that were in two geographical areas. So we were trying to figure out what was the best way to provide support and follow-up and reinforce our evaluation protocol to the promotoras that were out in the field and working on these workshops and performing these, facilitating these workshops at different times. So we decided to create a booster video, which I will show a little clip about in just a little bit. And we distributed the video to every promotora on a CD, also via online link, via email, and on the project Facebook page, so that they can view the video at any time they wanted and as many times as they needed. We also provided reminders about the evaluation protocol and the steps via Facebook messages and also weekly phone calls. We also realized that we needed to provide continual follow-up and support, even more so than we had initially anticipated. And so this is actually where the need to assess their use of technology came about. And so the data that I presented earlier ended up informing our follow-up plan, which consisted of regular in-person meetings, the booster video, and also asking the promotoras to tell us when were they going to start their initial workshop so that the project team can call them at least a week before and be able to answer any doubts or any questions they had and just reinforce again the evaluation protocol. That first session was the most intimidating because you had to facilitate the pretest. You had to code your participants. And so it was a little bit of an intimidating process. And so we created this follow-up plan to help support that. We used all methods of communication because although, like you saw, although they all owned an email account, they didn't all check it on a regular basis. So we used text messaging and everything else that you saw on there. But to our surprise, Facebook proved to be an extremely useful tool for multi-directional communication. It was project team talking to promotoras, them just communicating with us, and also building rapport among the promotoras via Facebook. So this is a booster video. It's 13 minutes long, and I am not going to show the whole thing, but I did want to get you to see just a little bit about what the content was. And you're going to see Vicky Avila, who's a lead promotora trainer for Vision and Compromiso, who trained the promotoras in the in-person training and also ran the webinar training. And so you can't see how animated and dynamic she is because you can't, well, you can see her, but you can't hear her. And you see that she's reinforcing our slogan that we had throughout the project, which was, if you start strong, you'll end strong. We really felt strongly that if they felt confident on that first session, they would end strong throughout the 11-session curriculum. So we would, in the workshop, in this booster session, we reinforced how to prepare for your workshops, the evaluation protocol, and then also she reviewed the content for that first lesson and also provided some tips on facilitation. You'll also see that she continued by reinforcing the idea of communication and how important that was in order for them to communicate with the project team with any doubts or questions that they had. I'm going to fast forward here a little bit so you can see the part where we discussed and the evaluation piece. I can catch myself here. I'm glad you can't hear me. So on the evaluation piece, I reintroduced all the forms that we were using. So you'll see that I reintroduced here the code list, the attendance sheet, also the consent form, the pretest, and the comment sheet, which promotoras were asked to jot down their thoughts if anything stood out to them during the workshop. And then once I reviewed these, we then highlighted each of these forms individually on the booster session to remind them again, when do you use them, how do you introduce them, and then how to kind of complete them correctly. So I walked them through the process throughout the video. So I mentioned that Facebook was a really interesting tool that was very helpful and provided promotoras an opportunity to communicate different types of communications. One example is, for instance, this Facebook message from a promotora who's communicating to everybody, but particularly to the research team, and they're saying, I'm confirming that I've received the certificates for my participants. So once they were getting close to finishing their 11th session, we would mail them the certificates for their participants. So she's confirming that she received that, but she also has a lot of happy faces and hearts and saying hi to everyone. She's also saying that she's very excited because she's finishing her fourth workshop out in the community on July 3rd. And she's saying, it looks like a hot week, so everybody drink some water. So all kinds of communication going on. And then Rosa Barahona, who was one of the project managers, is communicating to the promotoras in Kern County that we have a project team who's going to be in the area. So if they have data, to please communicate with us as soon as possible. This is a really great example of how we use Facebook to help with the data collection. Here's Rosa just reinforcing this information they already know because they received it through the training, booster sessions, and our regular meetings. But she's reminding folks, once you're finished with session one, remember, we need your pretest, we need your code list, and we need the information, contact information. And then you have the promotoras saying they received it. Okie dokie, Señorita Rosita. Lastly, this is a very popular type of communication and messaging that happened because this was completely initiated by the promotoras. They wanted to share their accomplishments, so it was very common for them to post pictures about when they finished their workshops and their graduation and their ceremony and the parties that they would have with lots of great healthy food now. And then you have the other promotoras saying, congratulations, you did a great job, and they were very proud of them. So I mentioned the webinar training. This was a pilot project within this study. The community partner and us, the academic partner, we were genuinely very interested in this part of the study. We were all interested in seeing, was it feasible, and what would it take to actually make this happen. We were very ambitious, and we decided to teach all the 11-session NHLBI curriculum via webinar. We did so through a 7-day webinar training, which we offered on the same day of the week during the same time for 3 hours each day. 99 people registered on the first day or throughout the session, which we were all really taken aback by. And they were all asked to complete an online pretest within a certain time frame. 60 people completed the pretest within that time frame, and they were all invited to participate, and they were mailed the curriculum. 49 were in attendance on that first day, and out of those 45, 33 completed the attendance requirements that we had set and also the post-test. This was a great learning experience. We thought it was very successful, and I know that Visión y Compromiso is looking of providing trainings via webinar based on what we've learned. We certainly have a lot of lessons learned and recommendations that came out of this, and among those are the importance of recruiting a dynamic and enthusiastic presenter and trainer. Vicky Avila is very animated, and you can imagine how difficult it is to engage folks on the computer for 3 hours at a time for 7 weeks consecutively. Also, something we didn't do, but we would certainly do if we had to do it again and would recommend folks do, is coordinate a pre-webinar training on just webinar participation. For the majority of the promotoras who participated, it was their first time on a webinar training, and so obviously we faced some technical difficulties the first and second session because of that. But also the importance of having a tech assistant who can multitask and is very patient. We had Isalia Sumaya from Visión y Compromiso who took on that role and was communicating with the promotoras via webinar chat, email, text, cell phone, all kinds of ways behind the scenes in order to make this successful. And it was just a great learning opportunity for all of us. Also, it's important that you give folks the opportunity to participate in a group setting, even via webinar. Sometimes they don't feel that they have the capacity, don't feel tech savvy enough to participate. So we did have two or three groups that participated in small groups, maybe five groups participating via webinar. Via webinar, we reached folks throughout California, and we actually had a small group participate from Virginia as well. So the 25 promotoras that participated in the in-person training were also invited to participate as promotora advisory board members. And they met on a monthly basis for 1 hour at a time. They provided feedback and recommendations on the curriculum itself, on the evaluation training, and on how we can provide support. They shared with us the challenges and successes throughout the project. And also, one discussion that we had was around the use of technology and where does technology fall in and how do they value it in their work specifically as promotoras. Some of them talked about their cell phone as being their mobile office. Some of the ways that they use it is to take notes. They store participant contact information, obviously on our end, reinforcing password protection. They use cell phones to send messages, reminders to improve attendance in their own individual workshops in the communities. They take pictures to their cell phone, and then that's one way in which they document their group activities. They send and receive emails, those that have smartphones and are able to then know how to use it in that way. And they communicate with project staff via their cell phone. The Facebook is a way to recruit. They're still surprised at how many people they can reach so quickly. Some of them actually have group pages. So if they have different workshops that they're offering in the community at different times, they're able to get the word out really quickly via Facebook. They send reminder messages, again, reinforcing the need to continue to provide reminders out in the community and send in order to improve attendance and keep the retention rate that they did among such a long curriculum as was the case for this project. And they use Facebook also to communicate with project staff, as we saw. Although you see that promotoras are certainly using technology and value it, it's important to remember there are all different levels of capacity in the use of technology. Some have smartphones but don't necessarily know how to use all the features, but I think that's probably the case for most of us. But one example they gave is that they, for instance, they'll know how to take pictures but don't necessarily know how to upload it into an online platform and would like to learn how to do that. They also mentioned that they would like to build their capacity. They see the value in learning that. And some of the tools that they mentioned that they felt could help them in their work as promotoras is to build their capacity to use Skype and PowerPoint. And that is it for me today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So we now thank you for these wonderful presentations. Now we can open it up for discussion. We have almost 15 minutes before the end. So if you guys have any questions or comments, sure.
Actually, well, I think as far as the promotoras that receive the in-person training, if you're asking about their evaluation, their education background a little bit, I know that who they are. I know they've all received, and Maria Lemus, who's the director of Visión y Compromiso, is here, and she can shed some light on this better than I can. But I know that they all were seasoned promotoras. This project was only 16 months long. So we intentionally recruited promotoras who have been working out in the field for a long time now. And they've all received training to be a promotora besides the training that they received for this project. So they are seasoned promotoras who have worked several years. I don't have that data specifically. I'm sure their education varies from their home country. They're all Spanish speakers. And I don't know... Well, for the way we recruited for the in-person training was that Visión y Compromiso, this is where the importance of partnering with community organizations that know the community and know particularly the promotora model is so important, where we really relied on our community partner to decide how we were going to recruit. And they designed a job description. And they have a huge network of 4,000 promotoras statewide, so it wasn't difficult at all. But also selecting those that we thought would be good fits for this project. And so they turned in their resume, and they went through an interview, either phone or in person. That's how we selected the 25 promotoras. We're also limited in geographical areas because the way we proposed this project was that we were going to work in Los Angeles, specifically in service planning area 4, and then in Kern County. So we wanted to make sure the promotoras who were involved in this project, at least for the in-person training, that they also had experience in working in those geographical areas. For the webinar training, we just opened it up. And we were limited as far as time and who can participate, but you saw 99 people registered, and the way they found out about the webinar was through the Vision and Compromiso network, their online network. Something also quickly, we're, as an organization, always find ourselves being challenged with that aspect of how do you disseminate this information in a way that people can really take it and run and be able to implement or inform policy. We thought of ways, not this particular aspect of technology, but certainly, like I mentioned, there's a bigger project about the value of promotoras and the work that they do. And so we've worked on, maybe we're creating like a white paper. We know that other people are just really good at implementing policy, so what can we do to get at least this information in a format that they can use and then be able to do their work well? We're not policy people per se, so we know folks that do a really good job in doing that, and just always finding ways of, so people have ideas, we'd be happy to hear. And I know Visión en Compromiso has a big piece in advocacy, and just getting, how can we get this kind of research information in a format that would help those that are doing the advocacy work is always a challenge for us.
It's a fabulous question, and I appreciate you raising it. And, you know, in terms of the work, I mean, clearly you can see that my work is not quite at the level of my colleagues in terms of intervention, but I think the importance of testing assumptions for what we think are assumptions are really important, because those drive policy, and how we define a problem is going to set us up for what kinds of solutions are available to us. So to the extent that cultural assumptions about who Latinos are prevail, are going to shape policy. So we know, when we think about policy, we can think about the culture of poverty arguments, right? So if we don't think about, in many of the Latino health literature, we often assume that Latinos are happy-go-lucky, family-centered, resilient, nothing that's done to us will ever, hurt us because we're tough, right? Because we have, structures that can withstand structural hits. And so what I think the importance of testing these assumptions is that it let us see that that immigrants and immigrant structures are vulnerable to the policy environment. And the kinds of policies that we may think about are those that are suggested by my colleagues in terms of parks and communities, and also include how we think about immigration policy. I mean, anybody who's working in the field in terms of working with Latinos and populations that have higher proportions of immigrants, I think it's important for us to see how the immigrant environment is really shaping the fear and trust and distrust that may exist in communities. So I just wanted to add that.
Yes, both for the promotoras themselves, because they initially were research participants, and when they participated in the training, they completed a pre and post and 30-day follow-up as well, and then as did their participants, so they all completed a form for us to obtain and share photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and also as that was part of the consent, but also the importance of working with your IRB and individual universities to get them to understand really the process of what your project is, because I think a lot of times, especially within kind of the universities in Keck School or School of Medicine, for instance, that are not necessarily used to this type of project, used to more clinical trials, it's really important to have that dialogue.
Just help with the evaluation piece. My name is
any other questions? Anyone? And then I have one, two. Anybody else? One, two. Okay, we have 3 minutes. So that, who else wanted to ask a question? Oh, okay, yeah, and then I have one. Yeah,
you call.
That's a great question, and I'm also I'll address the makeup of the sample, which is mostly Mexican. So 60%, more than 60% of the sample was mostly Mexican. So very much, I mean, I really should have said something about this in terms of the limitations and future research, is that it kind of maps out in terms of the history of Latinos in the Midwest. In terms of being the majority Mexican and about 30% Puerto Rican. However, in terms of having more data in terms of Puerto Ricans and other Latino subgroups, that was definitely a limitation. And even to be able to get, I wasn't part of the data collection, but I work with the PIs who were part of the data collection. And just talking to them, even just getting, you know, it was a sample of over 3,000 people, and it was about a third Latino, a third African American, and a third white. So I was only looking at one third of an already, relatively small sample. And so definitely questions about Latino subgroup are still missing. The other piece about social ties, and I wonder, you know, I was thinking about the presentations, is that, you know, particularly when we're working with Latino immigrants and we think about social ties, we often think about social ties in the U.S. And many immigrants maintain social ties with their families in their country of origin. So we were not able to assess the extent to which, you know, the social network measures that are very much developed in the U.S. context. You know, so I think that was one piece that that we talk about in the paper that is coming out in Ethnicity and Health pretty soon. In terms of, you know, what's missing, in terms of transnational social ties, in terms of so Latino subgroups, and there was another question that I really wish we had. Oh, one thing that I think is really important that I wish we had a different measure is that our measure in terms of family and relative, we have a measure that actually doesn't show up in this paper, but in another paper, when we're looking at, there's one paper that has found out that particularly for Mexicans, family ties seem to be more important than friend ties. But the measures that we had combined family and friends. So being able to disentangle the kinds of different types of ties and the extent to which these ties are supportive, the quality of social ties are supportive, or whether they are, you know, negative hassles. Again, that's another paper that we are looking at, so the positive versus negative quality of social ties. But definitely, understanding social ties in a larger transnational network, I think, is something that's missing.
Well, we'd like to thank you for coming, and thank you very much, and hope you have a wonderful afternoon.